You're listening to The Broker's Terminal, a Mass Effect podcast. On this episode of The Broker's Terminal, Season 2, Episode 1, we discuss romances in the game, our favorites, our rare pairs, and beyond. Thanks for listening. This is The Broker's Terminal, a Mass Effect podcast. Lexi.
Yeah.
It is time for one of our favorite conversations. Before we get into it, hello, listeners. Rachel hey. And Lexi, hey. Rachel and Lexi are here to talk about Mass Effect, which is good because that's what we talk about on this podcast. But we're here to talk about romances in Mass Effect, including Mass Effect Andromeda, and the role that romances play not only in the games, but I think in the gaming world in general.
Absolutely.
But before we get into that, it's been a few episodes. I think we've had like three or four episodes in a row.
Yeah.
Where it's
yeah.
been with guests. So we're going to hop into a little bit of what we like to call the 2-minute defense back by popular demand. So for those of you who are maybe listening for the first time, Lexi and I have, you can't see it, but Lexi and I have a spin the wheel game listed with all of the playable NPCs, aka people you can bring with you in your party. We spin the wheel and then we have 2 minutes to defend or at least talk a little bit about the character that it lands on. I've been watching a lot of Pokemon like unboxings, so I feel like I'm really going for some like big pulls, some chases here. Love to land on Liara personally. I think that would just be really great for me. But there's some other really great.
Who have we even done so far? I'm trying to remember. We
you
did
got Ashley right off the rip.
I did.
We've got
Legion. You got Legion.
I got Legion. Jacob. We've gotten Jacob out of the way.
And Tally.
And Tally, yeah. And
yeah.
That may have been it so far.
I think so.
There are some Patreon exclusive. I always forget to pitch the Patreon mm-hmm. here. So there are some Patreon exclusive 2-minute defenses that are for non-playable NPCs. So if you guys are looking for conversation on Hackett or Anderson or some other peeps that I can't remember right now, you can go to our Patreon and subscribe, and then you will have exclusive access to some really nifty content. All right, but Lexi, per usual, is going to go first. I'm going to click to spin.
Oh, boy. If I get Liara, you guys are going to witness an on-air murder.
And the best,
she's going to come to my house and just get me from behind. It's fine.
Whatever she's into. And also, so you guys can't see us, but Lexi can see me. So the face I'll probably make if she gets Liara is going to be
my finger is going to be on the screenshot button because it's going to be legendary.
We'll share that with you guys. All right. You know what, though? I'm just going to, before we do this, you might get Liara, but that means that I could get Miranda.
This is true. This is true. We could trade off.
But I think Lexi is not as much of a spoil. She's just not like as bad of a loser as I am. So, all right, here we go. It's spinning. Oh, boy. All right. Ooh, a good one for Lexi.
Okay.
You will have 2 minutes to defend a fan favorite named Rex.
Oh, Rex. All right, on the clock. So Rex is, you know, our main Krogan companion. We get him in Mass Effect 1. He's older, so he's got a lot of experience. He's a mercenary. I could listen to his low rumbly voice talk, honestly, for a long time. But, you know, we get to hear some opinions, especially with the Genophage and how that's affected the Krogan population and culture. And, you know, he's got, obviously, he's rough around the edges, and some people are kind of like, oh. But you know, I think he has good intentions at heart for his people and for himself and their future of the Krogan, which has been the whole storyline throughout the whole thing. So, really to defend Rex is to, you know, support curing the Genophage, but also going back to Mass Effect 1, really quickly here, because I'm an Ashley stan first and foremost, people love to blame Ashley for shooting Rex. Now, first of all, you have to actually talk to Rex to find out about his family's armor, which you pick up on a side quest on some planet out in some backwater space area. And so that, if you get that, that gets his loyalty. And if you do that and have enough charm or intimidate in your points, you're able to talk him out of it. However, people get mad because they didn't bother to do the side quest or they didn't bother to talk to him. And then they end up having to face off with Rex either themselves or Ashley doing her damn job, shoots him before he can kill her commanding officer. That's literally her job. So people get mad about that. And it's like, y'all, Rex is a dangerous person and could seriously have killed Shepard easy. So, you know, that point I gotta say is related to Rex. Otherwise, later on a more positive note, I got 10 seconds. I love the scene in Citadel DLC. If you've cured the genophage and he's at the bar complaining about the fact that his quads hurt because he's been reproducing with the females so much. There we go.
I think that in itself.
I think that was great.
Yeah, well done. I'm going to, this is what happens, by the way, if you are somebody new. Lexi gets some bomb-ass character like Rex that I'm going to get. Actually, I don't know who's left that I wouldn't want.
Yeah, we got a pretty good, like, I don't think, of all the squad mates, they're all pretty decent. We got Jacob
Caden
out of the way.
Is still
so,
there.
And, well, Caden's still there.
But, you know, he's more interesting than others. Famous last words. All right, here we go. Actually, let me get my... for those of you who don't know, I'm dealing with something called pregnancy brain. So if I sound like I don't know what's going on, it's probably because I don't. Okay, so we're going to do some...
Yeah, she's going to ride on that excuse for the next, oh, what, like
five months? 100%. Yeah. And then also after, because I'll have an infant.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Spinning... I promise to not lie. Oh, cool. Oh, this is interesting. Neat. I have 2 minutes to talk about our favorite convict, Jack.
Nice.
All right. So Jack, known as Subject Zero to some and Jacqueline or Jennifer to others, I'm not really quite sure what her real name is, but that's fine. So Jack, she is brought to us in Mass Effect 2. Many of you know she is a member. She is somebody who Cerberus has Shepard go out and get. And she is not what anybody is expecting. Jack is one of my, like, we're going to do tiers, right? People love the tiers. I would say Jack is probably one of my, like, high B, low A tier characters for me, like one of my favorites. She gets kind of, like, you know, push behind some of my other faves, but I really like Jack's complexity. I really like how she's kind of like cliche, but like tough on the outside and like really soft and gooey on the inside. And I think from a therapy perspective, so somebody who practices therapy, she's actually a pretty good representation of somebody who's been abused and used and knows that they've been abused and used, and somebody who makes the steps to not let that define them. And so I give Jack a lot of credit, and quite frankly, I give the writers a lot of credit because in video games, people are not always great at writing that and providing that kind of... you know, perspective and a representation. So I think Jack is just somebody who is okay with being tough, but she's also okay with coming to terms with being soft. And a lot of her journey is allowing Shep to help her kind of like meet herself where she's at and where she needs to be, which is something I say a lot to my clients, which is like, just, you know, accept yourself, meet yourself where you need to be, and you'll be able to move forward. So yeah, I think Jack is great. And she should have been a romance for a female Shepard, and we'll get to that later. Okay, I'm done.
Nice. Cool. I really love the hard on the outside, gooey on the inside. Just makes me think of like a hard candy, you know?
Yeah.
And, nice and sweet on the inside.
Yeah, and I think, and I will talk about this a little bit later with Jack, but again, I think that she is, for many people, just one of those characters that kind of gets lost. Just because of what happens in the third game. She's not really there as much, but she's just a really, really good character. She's very, very well written. Courtney Taylor, if you want to come on the show, please, we'd love to have you.
She's great.
Cool. Yeah, awesome.
That was good. That was good. I'm
I
looking
think
forward to the next time we do this.
we
And as these
do
characters start to limit down, you watch. Liara and Miranda will be the
last
two we do.
I was gonna say, do you want to know who's left, or should we kind of just keep it?
No. We've kept track. I mean, there's only.
No, I mean, I can see them. I was just gonna say, like, well, we'll keep it. No, you guys at home,
keep it a surprise.
Yeah, you guys. Okay, cool. For those of you wondering, by the way, we don't do that with our guests because I don't want them to feel pressured into doing it.
Yeah.
So that's just for Lexi and I to enjoy. cool. All right. Well, let's jump in to the romance conversation. For anybody listening, I do want to like put out a half disclaimer. We think that this may be a longer episode than normal. Lexi and I, if I may speak for Lexi, which I usually do, both like the romancing and the role-playing aspects of Mass Effect are like the reasons we like Mass Effect. So we have a lot to say. And everything that we talk about tonight has been pared down. So the length of this is going to be lengthy, even though it's been pared down. So please,
maybe we should do a bonus episode for Patreon.
By the way, if you'd like to subscribe to our Patreon,
we'll plug it again.
Patreon.com/brokersterminal. But yeah, no, for sure. So thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoy this. This is a really like important topic for us, the different things that we're going to talk about tonight in terms of romancing. And we would love to hear from you. If you're watching on YouTube, you know, please leave please leave a comment. If you don't forget, you can join our Discord. We have a lot of discourse in the Discord about the episodes, and we'd love to have you. You can follow us on Twitter, and now we're going to jump in. I'm going to stop promoting, maybe. And here we go. So I'm kind of going to ask this question to Lexi, and we'll build upon the conversation. And honestly, I'm asking the question to you, Lexi, because I value your thoughts on this topic in terms of Mass Effect. So what do we think the role of romance in a sci-fi role-playing game is?
So I'm going to go back to Mass Effect 1. You know, as I've said before, it's something for me that is one of my favorite games of all time, even though like before the Legendary Edition, it was definitely dated to 2007. But I think the bigger concept of Mass Effect 1 being more of a role play game itself, where you had to manage your inventory and your attachments and your guns, and also just the bigger world, like you really got to explore. I mean, as much as it was a pain in the ass to traverse all those planets in the Mako, but I think with coming back with the Legendary Edition really reignited my love for Mass Effect 1 because it did feel like a whole new game with the way that they really upgraded it. So the romance angle in that, I think, is just another aspect of, you know, our character Shepard and being set in this great big universe, that if they didn't have it, it would feel kind of lacking. I think it's just another aspect of life that, you know, we get to have our hand in. And I mean, Shepard's enigma, I can't speak.
Pregnancy brain.
Yeah, I don't have that excuse. you know, they're in enigma where, you know, they've risen up through the ranks, even into Mass Effect 1. You know, they have their service history. They're established. They're, you know, 28, 29, somewhere in there, and they've already established themselves, and makes me feel like I need to step up. But besides that, you know, we have this person that's got a reputation and they're kind of doing the impossible, and that makes them hot. Like, you know, and I mean, obviously everyone's going to play differently and headcanon their own Shepard however they want. That's how you play a role-playing game. But, you know, we have this person that it has a lot of power and a lot of influence and a lot of things that are considered attractive. And so to have the ability to have romance and love and sex and all these things that are part of the human condition is what I like to see in games, and I think BioWare as a whole, I'll speak to playing Dragon Age as well, I think that's something they really brought to the table themselves. I think a lot of other games either try to model themselves after BioWare now in that sense, or if they have romances, they're not necessarily to that sort of scale of story progression or choice and how that impacts your romance. You know, I'm thinking of Fallout 4, where it's a Bethesda game, or Skyrim, you know, where you could have a spouse and there'd be some dialogue and stuff, and they'd have, you know, they could be a companion with you, and you can have kids and stuff. But I think in that sense, they don't have the same contribution to the story, you know, with these characters that get invested and have. And not to, you know, shit on any Bethesda voice actor, but I think they use the same pool of like 10 people. So it's like the same voice actors over and over, and they just have, you know, the bare minimum. But I think with BioWare, they really integrate romance arcs into this game that get you so invested. And I think that is what part of the playing comes into. You're role playing a character that, you know, has already been pre-created, but you're adding your own aspect, you're making these choices that are from you, the gamer, and that reflects that. And I think just having them there, and sci-fi just happens to be in such an immersive world with Mass Effect, the universe as it is, with all these alien species and humanity branching out relatively new to the Citadel, it's just a really great opportunity to have some really interesting interactions, and I think it just adds another layer of depth.
Yeah, I really liked what you said about it just like being part of life, you know? And I think that for many people at all different, you know, steps of life that they're in, you know, you'd mentioned like, I need to step it up in terms of your own stuff. But like, you know, and that's not to say that this like replaces that for some people, but you know, it's certainly an opportunity for people to experience that for the first time. Certainly, like, an example I can think of is my brother, who played Mass Effect before I did, but very young, like, kind of, like, mm-hmm. experienced romance for the first time and, you know, just got to kind of see that part of it that he wouldn't see because he was a kid. But, you know, the other, with that being said, like, the other part of it, too, is it kind of normalizes in a good way, romance. It's not mm-hmm. just about like sex and like the sex of being with somebody romantically. It's about the emotion. It's about the partnerships. It's about, you know, all of that. And I think that, mm-hmm. that's something that can be cultivated with the characters that you're not romancing as well. When we spoke with Emily in our episode 5, I think it was, when she was our guest, we spoke about found family. But I think, too, that, like, normalizing, you know, Liara is your romantic partner, but she's also, like, you know, in your corner. She's the person who you're turning to as Shepherd in times of strife, and, you know, she's the one that you know is there, and for whoever you're romancing, mm-hmm. Thane, you know, whoever. I don't know why Thane came to mind. I secretly, like, am upset I've never romanced Thane. I think I'd really like his romance. Anyway, so I really like how you said that, and you saying that made me think of it's really, they go just beyond, oh, let me like romance this person. Mm-hmm. It gives players the opportunity to truly like form a relationship in mm-hmm. in this virtual world. What would you say that aside from maybe what we've said, anything we haven't said, that BioWare does really well, or did well in 2007 in a way that paved the way for other romances, in other games even?
Yeah, I think it's just sort of, I mean, again, this attests to their character writing and the dialogue and stuff like that. That's definitely a BioWare writer's room top tier thing, with some exceptions that, you know, there are poor choices being made sometimes. But in terms of romance paths, I think it's kind of it goes well with the flow of the game. You know, you start with your interactions. We'll go back to Mass Effect 1 again, where, you know, if you're Femme Shep, your options be Caden or Liara, or if you're Dude Shep, it's Ashley or Liara. And I think it was really neat the way that you could kind of start There's a little, I mean, okay, we are going to joke. I will say one thing that I think they could have done better is having the flirty option and the being nice option to be yeah. a little bit different, because if you say one nice thing to Caden, that boy is like, oh?
Hello?
Oh, are you into me, ma'am? And you're like, no, no, stop. And then you have to be mean to him, and I always feel bad because he kind of looks like a sad, like you kicked a puppy and he's looking up at you like, oh, why'd you do that? And I mean, I guess I can't say the same on the Ashley side. I find it easier. I don't know. It's been a while since I've replayed Mass Effect 1 as a male Shepard, but I always find as Fem Shep, it's like you're dodging minefield to not engage with Caden. Now, in my case, it doesn't matter because he doesn't usually make it off Vermeier, so that's fine. But getting back to like sort of the progression, I think they do the progression well enough. I would like to see that, you know, it'd be nice to have a little more interactions here and there. We did get to kind of see that in Mass Effect 3 with, you know, the romances that are aboard your ship, Liara. We get a lot of moments with her throughout the games. And then, of course, Citadel DLC, where you get a date or two with your love interest of choice, and you get to have romantic interactions with them, which is also just additional. But I think they added in that, which made up for some of the lacking interactions before, especially if you romance someone in Mass Effect 2 and who are not part of the team later, like Miranda or Jack. So I think, you know, and I think another thing that I really liked, which is kind of funny, but also I think they could do differently is the concept of polyamory. But I will say I really get a kick out of in Mass Effect 1 if Shepard's been hitting up both either Caden, Ashley and Liara, and they have that one confrontation.
Yeah.
I know some people don't like it, but I always get a kick out of it because you can be a real skeezball and say, well, why can't I have you both? And then I'm pretty sure Ashley like wants to hit you in the face. It's pretty funny. I don't know what Caden says, but
I think he's very nice about it, if I remember yeah. correctly. I don't usually get it now because I know how to at least I can even avoid that. Like even if I were to not dump him on Vermeier, I would I know how to like talk to him now, so I don't even make it yeah. an issue. But
yeah, I do think
he's
it's
very
interesting.
Nice about it. Yeah.
To have also, I think one thing that they've gotten better at too is having your other squad mates or friends comment about your romance. I noticed that in this playthrough where I've been romancing Miranda, where Liara actually will say that, you know, Miranda's after Horizon, you go talk to her and she says that Miranda was always a driven woman. And I think you and Miranda will be very happy together. And then there's another, of course, the iconic emergency induction port drinking scene where Tally is, which makes bringing Tally to Horizon a lot better. I did that this time around, and now it makes more sense that she's drinking so hard after the fact that she saw it herself. But, you know, she mentions briefly that, I guess this would be harder for you with you two being together or whatever, like the little throwaway lines that you wouldn't get unless you go talk to people, I think is just another contributing factor to feeling like it's a part of your world, your universe as you play these games. But I do think one other thing they could do better is a little bit more, or even like, and again, maybe this is just the bias of me coming from, you know, playing BioWare's Dragon Age, where you get a lot more party banter when you're out on missions. And I know they did more of that in Andromeda, but to have more banter and including your choices and kind of playing into them, I know that's kind of hard because there's so many choices you can make, but to have little things like that, I think is what I'd like to see.
Yeah. And I was, when you had mentioned like in Mass Effect 3, when they start to really introduce banter, I thought of Mass Effect Andromeda, where they do it really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
That is one thing that I hope in whatever Mass Effect next is, that they have just all of the banter. I thought that was just super, super well done.
So
about the thing I told you about, with the picture and the whole doodad. So I'm trying to think if for me there's anything. We're going to talk about like the having more fluidity in terms of who can romance who. I think that's kind of like a no-brainer, certainly for Lexi and I, for what we would have change. But I think everything you've said, I pretty much agree with. Just to like not necessarily play devil's advocate, but I will say that in terms of like Mass Effect 1, a lot of people in the spheres that Lexi and I inhabit, we all kind of complain about Kaden, you know, kind of like coming on strong. I'm willing to say like it was 2007. Mm-hmm. They were not the first game to do romances, but like one of the first games to do romances. They were trying to figure out how to do it both like
organically
and mechanically in terms of how the game system actually works. So I'm willing to give them a pass. There's some people who say that even like later, specifically Liara, and Kaden are still a little bit pushy, to Shep about like, oh, you're not romancing me. What do you mean? I would give them a little bit, them being like the devs, a little bit more like of a what the heck, dude, for Mass Effect 3 than Mass Effect 1. But I think it is the worst in Mass Effect 1, and I'm willing to like give them a pass on it.
Yeah.
Not that you're not. I
don't hate Kaden on account of his character. I do want to make that clear. I mean, he's not my preferred Vermeer survivor, but I did make a femship to romance him. I want to give him a chance because really I'm just a butch lesbian Kaden. This is my problem. I don't have the migraines, but I get a lot of headaches. I'm Canadian. I like steak and I like beer. And I have big hair. At this point, I should just cosplay him. I do want to give the man a chance. I got to the Citadel in that playthrough and then I stopped. Life.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and that's fair. I mean, that's how it goes. I think I may have also tried to romance him once and it's just like not my cup of tea. And that's like, some people, you know, laugh. They're like, Rachel, do you romance men anyway? Like, yes, I do. I'll actually be talking about one shortly. And he just was like, not my cup of tea. Like, I actually do think I'd really like a Thane romance. But that's the beauty of romancing. And that goes back to like what Lexi spoke about, in terms of like, that's the beauty of role playing. Lexi and I have our favorite romances that are different for the reasons they should be different because we're experiencing the games differently.
In our own way, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess we can kind of jump topics here. I think we covered that pretty good.
Yeah.
So we were going to do a little segment on our favorite romances or any disliked romances. Sure. So I'm going to hand the floor to Rach.
Wow.
To start. I know.
Lexi usually, you know, goes first. There's probably a joke there somewhere in the folds of our relationship, but I am
but happy. Yeah, if you want to just go with your, you know, I think maybe if you just want to talk about the three,
sure,
your three,
yeah,
favorite romances, and then if you have anything, ones that you disliked or sure have watched and disliked, mm-hmm, or just never have any interest, go for it.
Sure. Yeah, and so this is where we were talking about that we pared it down. Lexi and I literally sat down before this this episode and we were like, so how do we make this short? Let's pick three romances to talk about, because otherwise we'd be here all night. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise I'm going to jump right into my favorite romances. I'm going to speak about Liara's romance. I know guys, settle down. For you listeners just gasping in absolute shock, I'm not going to like probably talk about it as much as you guys would think, but I will talk about it in terms of like just Liara's purpose in Shepard's story and why it works so well as a romance. And I know she's not everybody's cup of tea. I think, as I mentioned before, for many people, she's as forced down people's throats as Kaden feels. And that's okay. When people tell me that, they're like not into Liara, that's okay. I tell them like that. The beauty of Mass Effect is that you play it however you want, and you experience it in whatever way you want. For me, you know, Liara just, I was very connected to her as soon as I met her, not even in terms of romancing her, just in terms of like, wow, that's a big nerd who got stuck in a bubble. I probably also would get stuck in a bubble because I am excitable and interested in things and curious. And so for me, it was an immediate like connection slash attraction to somebody who, and I said this last episode that I would totally like kiss myself, who reminded me of myself, right? So it was really, really cool. And then just, you know, kind of the way that Liara gets folded into Shepard's story. She, you know, Liara is really like the piece that you need to figure out the beacon and sort of figure out like where Saren is going and this connection to the Protheans. And so when it comes to romancing her, it's just really easy it felt like for me a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. It was very much like, this is the person who's in my corner, sort of like regardless of whether or not I want her there, but it's like I want her there, so it's easy for me to be like, yeah, great, let's do this together, let's embark on this together. In Mass Effect 1, I liked they didn't shy away from talking about how she's young. Mm-hmm. I think for me it may be like having her like be a little bit older in human years, like as a older adult now playing the game, maybe wouldn't feel as icky, but like, I get it. You can't like weigh it the same. I've gone back and forth with this myself in terms of like, but she was only like 18. No, she wasn't. She'd been alive for 106 years, whether she was like mature like or not. She's been alive for 106 mm-hmm. years. She knows how to like function. So I didn't feel as gross about it like after I thought about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a human who's 18 and then there's an Asari who's been alive for 106 years.
It's all about the cultural context, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you, Lexi. So Lexi's like, yeah, you're right, it's fine. Now, this is going to be a controversial statement. I'm trying to like work fast while like really projecting my love for Liara. But Mass Effect 2 is my favorite Liara. And I know that for some people that's really odd because she's not in Mass Effect 2 very much, especially if you don't play Lair of the Shadow Broker. But hear me out on this. So the reason why people like, for those people who like Liara, romancing or not, we'll stick to romancing in this case. The reason why people like Liara most of the time is because she's a boss-ass bitch in Mass Effect 3. You know, she's like coming to her own. She's taken on this role as an information broker. You know, depending on what you've played, you learn that she either learn or you know that she's the Shadow Broker. And she, you know, she pops out of that vent on Mars and you're like, hello, wife, good to see you. How you be doing? But in Mass Effect 2 is where all that magic happens. And in fact, the 2 years between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, when Shepard is not alive, is where that magic really, really happens. And for people who don't give Liara the time, whether they mean to or not, you miss that. You kind of take it for granted that like you see her on Ilium awkwardly. For those of you who have never done this, play Mass Effect 2 the first time you go to Ilium. Stop at the, when you go out onto, it's Nos Ostra port or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stop when you go out there, turn to where Liara's office is, and you will see a very poorly 2D render of Liara looking out over the Nos Ostra scape to see you, okay? She loves you. She's there, okay? So all of the magic that is Liara that everybody loves in Mass Effect 3 happens in those 2 years that you don't get to see in the games. And there's just something so magical to me about Mass Effect 2, Liara. Mm. When I was role-playing her, that was like my favorite Mass Effect, or that my favorite Liara to roleplay. There's just so much to like pick apart. And so when I was romancing her and I learned about Lair of the Shadow Broker, I was like, oh my gosh, you mean there's more of this glorious Mass Effect 2 Liara? So please, like, if you're a Liara romancer, take time in Mass Effect 2 to just like sit there and listen to her and understand and like do all the things you can do in Lair of the Shadow Broker. you have no excuse not to now because you can buy Mass Effect Legendary Edition and play Lair of the Shadow Broker. But the one thing that I'll talk about before I get to Mass Effect 3 Liara is you do get to learn about that magic that happens between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2 in the comics. So there's a lot of really good information on Liara that happens where she is the one who brokers the deal to find Shepard's dead body, get it from the Shadow Broker, yeah, and that's how she like knows the Shadow Broker and loses Farron. Sorry, boy. And gets it to Cerberus. I mean, like, Liara makes that happen. She teams up with Miranda Lawson. Don't tell me they didn't have a thing. We'll get back to that later. So that's where all the magic happens. That's why I love Mass Effect 2 Liara. She doesn't get enough credit. I know she's not in the game that much, but I could just go on and on and on. Anyway, so Mass Effect 3 Liara, I've kind of already talked about her, but, like, that's just really where the romance, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Not cultivates, like, accumulates or some word. That's just where it, like, comes to a head. So, comes back. She's on Team Shepard. You know, she's there to, like, again, just, like, be in your corner and be, like, be an emotional, you know, beacon. No pun intended. for Shepard. Maybe a little bit of a pun intended. But, like, you really do get to see just, like, how in-depth their relationship is. And even in the times where you haven't been able to see them, the game really like allows you to come back in and like recognize just like how deep their love is for one another, especially if you're romancing her. And so, you know, the scenes from Thessia where Shepard, you know, is like, hey, you should be upset. You know, you have every right to be distraught and just like totally hurt and confused, and the way that they're just like there for each other is just really phenomenal. So again, like Liara's whole thing is just that she is loyal, maybe to a fault, but Shepard and Liara are just so like copacetic. They grow together, and just, you know, it's just like a really, really, it's a nice romance. You know, I think that there's other romances that have more layers. I'm okay to say that. Lexi's going to speak about, I would say, probably the most like layered romance in the game. But I'm okay with like the emotional depth that Liara and Shepard have together, just for the reasons I described. Most of those reasons being Mass Effect 2 Liara. Cool. So Lexi was going to have me do all three. I just talked for a long time. So
all right.
Lexi, why don't you hop into like whichever one you want to talk about first?
Okay. All right. You know what? Maybe I'll save my the layered one for last, yeah, just to keep you guys hanging on and listening to our podcast all the way. so I guess the first one I'm going to talk about is Trainer. So, you know, in the development of Mass Effect, you know, they had straight characters and bi characters, though the latter were kind of few and far between, but they did have them. And it was by Mass Effect 3 with some pushback from, you know, some LGBT gamers that were really, you know, wanting representation, wanting, same gender romances. And so the sort of, accumulation of that, there's your word, was Steve Cortez and Samantha Trainor as the first gay and lesbian romance, respectively. And then later on, additionally, they, of course, made Caden bisexual as well. So with Trainor, I love her romance. I do, but I also have some issues. So I adore, so the things that I love the most, first of all, Alex Wilton Regan does a tremendous voice acting job on Trainor's lines. She later went on, as some of you may know, to be the Inquisitor, one of the female options for that game, and that got her big break there. But her role as Trainor is also influenced, side note, but she has two mums herself, so she really put in her own experiences into that and wanting that representation. She's talked about it before on some of the N7 Day panels, so that's definitely something that I enjoy. And I think Alex has her heart in the right place when it comes to the portrayal of that character. And, you know, Alex, someday if you're out there and you want to join this podcast, we would love to have you. But into the character herself, you know, she's this woman who was colony born. She's on the famous Horizon planet that we see not only in Mass Effect 2, where we see our Vermeier survivor for the first time and have the big fight there, but also the home where Sanctuary gets put, where Miranda's father has that horrendous refugee center where they start experimenting on people. So she's from that colony world and got a scholarship to go through university via the Alliance. So she went to Oxford and blah, blah, blah. She's very incredibly smart. And, you know, was originally just assigned from Alliance Research and Development to retrofit the Normandy after Shepard surrendered it. Like, she was never meant to leave the lab. Like, she was a lab rat. Like, there was no... Oh, wait, that's the wrong connotation. But anyway, my brain went gym rat, lab rat. Not quite the same. But anyway, you know, she was meant to just stay groundside. Well, when war happens and that warship was meant to go, that's out you go. That's, you know, so she's really, I love her arc. I love that she gets to kind of like come into her own in her own way. Like, yeah, she's never going to be a groundside soldier marine. But she has the brains to run the communications center, quantum entanglement, all this nerdy shit that she says that I'm just like, keep talking, girl, because I have no idea what you're saying, but it's really cute. And, you know, comes into her own and gets, you know, kind of picks up on this romance with Shepard, and it's kind of like, it's one of those first romances we also get in the series where they're not one of our squad mates. Same with, like, Cortez is the pilot, so we do get a little more involvement with him, but they're not one of your squad mates that you can take with you. And so I think that's kind of got a unique sort of dynamic where, you know, you're the soldier and out in the field and shooting shit, and then you come back to your ship and there's your girl. So, you know, she does get this development. And I do think it's a really cute sort of, you start off kind of casual, like there was that sort of flirtatiousness that ends up firstly in a sex scene and then kind of progresses into the whole, my favorite part of the romance where she expresses that, you know, she wants to raise a family with you with the white picket fence and a dog and kids. And you're like, I'm crying in the middle of the CIC. Thank you, Samantha, for this. And Alex's voice acting on that is perfect. And I think overall it's a cute, I mean, again, it's a short romance because you're only getting content in the third game. But as for a lesbian romance, I think that's, it's really nice to have that normalized. And I know Alex talked about that on the panel, especially with, as I said, with her two mums. So just to normalize that a lesbian relationship is great. Now, all my positive things are said. The issue I have, and this is going to go on into probably a bigger portion when we do talk about LGBTQ rep, but there's this weird sort of fetishization to the male gate, like to the way that lesbian relationships are presented in video games, especially with the target audience of cis-het men, straight men. So if you'll notice, all the possible female character, like female player character and female romance options, all the women are very feminine. And this is not just Mass Effect, it's in Dragon Age as well. All the possible sapphic romances are with feminine women. And in Trainer's case, you know, the shower sex scene, it's different. You know, at first you're kind of like, okay, and also why is my Shepard walking in there fully freaking clothed? That's one thing I would like to change. You know, I realize with Dragon Age Inquisition and Mass Effect Andromeda, we did, and you know, they had it in Mass Effect 1, but then Fox News got all, did, you know, I've talked about it before, where they got all uppity about the sex scenes and the gays are taking over. But, you know, can we please bring back bare boobs and bare butts? I, you know, that just makes it a little more immersive. But anyway, They don't. That's one scene. Fine. Okay. But this is my gripe. They make Sam have this weird thing about sex in water, and it's weird. Like in Citadel, when you invite her up to use your hot tub, well, not to use the hot tub, she comes to see you, and then she's like, "Oh my God, you have a hot tub," and they end up, you know, having another sex scene in that moment, and it's like this really, and you know, maybe that's just my personal interpretation, but it's kind of weird, like to consistently have that be her thing, and it's like you don't give that to anybody else but the lesbian character. And it just feels kind of fetishized in that regard, you know, out of somebody's porn fantasy that they've probably seen. And so that's why it's like, you know, in general, most of the time, I love watching or playing the romance. I think it's great. But it's just in the back of my mind, I can't help but feel about that. And I think that's something we need, you know, that people who write these things need to be aware of, which is why I do think that, you know, it's not just representation on screen, but representation in the writer's room that matters. Because I think someone should have said, hey, this kind of comes off a little weird. Maybe don't have like the hot tub scene. Maybe, you know, just have them make out on the couch or something. I you know, just something that doesn't fall into that. Because again, if it just happened once, okay, fine, whatever, sexy shower scene, even though Shepard's fully clothed. But to have that happen again just feels weird, you know? But to go back to a positive note, though, I do think Trainer's important. And I think, you know, I've certainly expressed it to Alex on Twitter for sure, about how important it was to see that. And especially for me when I first played it. Now, I didn't romance her at first, but I did look into her romance. And for me, at that point in my life where I was barely 18, almost 19, and kind of at that point I identified as bi, but it was still new to me. I was going off to college and hadn't dated any girls yet, and so for me just to see that was really important. So it does have a place in my heart, and I think it's important for young LGBT people to have that in their games and media. So yeah, that's my spiel.
Well said. A single thing that I'm going to add, not because I need to, but because I have diarrhea of the mouth, is just going to be that, like, whether or not it's your personal interpretation that, like, those scenes are being fetishized or the theme of fetish, I don't know if they're purposely fetishizing them, but it has that theme. Just to go back to it, like, that's what Mass Effect is about. Like, it's about your story being told and your story being told right. And so I'm thinking forward, like, to Andromeda, and I think that they do a better job of those stereotypes. There's one stereotype in Mass Effect Andromeda that I know people had talked about with a gay character, with Gil. People had talked about that. You may have even mentioned it. I don't remember. So it still happens. I think that that's just part of, unfortunately, like part of our society right now. But certainly, like, as just people start to become more educated, you know, hopefully those things continue to change. Cool. I hope you guys like hearing about romances, because we're going to keep going here. So before we do that, seriously, like, we want to know what your favorite romances are too. So, like, please comment below if you're listening on YouTube. Let us know in our Discord. Shout us out on Twitter. Like, let us know what your favorite romances, what they are and why. This is like a huge part of the game that it deserves the discourse we're giving it. So that's why we're taking so long to talk about it. And if anything, you get to see like the different reasons why people like certain romances, why Lexi and I are choosing these romances as our favorite. And that's why we're doing this. If you're hating it, sorry, this is the format we chose to do. Cool. So I'm actually going to throw everybody for a wild, what's like the idiom I'm thinking of? Just like a wild ride here, just like a
wild card.
Wild card, like something coming out of left field. Insert idiom here. I'm going to talk about Reyes Vidal. All right. So Reyes Vidal was my first romance in Mass Effect Andromeda. I know what you're thinking. Rachel, he's a man. I know. Okay. I have a motto that I stand pretty firmly by when it comes to me playing video games and doing romances, which is I'm with a man. I am married to a man. I don't need to romance a man in a video game. I know what it's like. But I gotta tell you, boy, something about Reyes Vidal, that man looked at me and like walked over with his little, you know, jumper on with his dark skin and his beautiful eyes and his like sleek hair. And I was like, sir, you can call me Mamacita whenever you want. Here's the thing with Reyes Vidal. He is like a Byronic hero a little bit. He's not really a good guy. He's not really a bad guy. He's just this dude who you come across who's like literally like the king of Kadara. And he is somebody who gets you into trouble and starts some problems. But he's loyal about it. He's very like interested in making sure that he is your dude, your front guy. And I really liked that in Andromeda, a game that was struggling, not because it was struggling, but just because it was going to, because of how the trilogy went, like a game that was going to struggle with like its identity and getting gamers into connecting with new characters that we were not like dedicated or involved with. And I found that he was someone who was very like one of the more interesting characters like right off the rip when you first meet him compared to some of the others. Like Vetra stands out to me as being someone super, super interesting. Like Korra and Liam, like they're kind of run of the mill. Gil's funny, but not really like so interesting. Drac, that's his name, right? Yeah. Drac is interesting. But I thought that at least for a human, Reyes Vidal kind of like stood out and was someone really, really fun and really, really interesting. And the nice thing is that you don't have to romance him, but if you do romance him and you choose him over Sloane, at least in that fight, or that conflict, he comes back. Like, he comes back at the end of the game to, like, greet you and, like, be your partner and just, like, continue to show, like, love for his Queen of Kadara. So, I don't know. I thought that he was, certainly for me, that's a little bit of a different type of romance. I'm obviously someone who's very motivated by, like, deep emotional shit. But for him, it was just, like, fun and flirty and silly and... my first writer was into it. And so that's why I ended up, with him. And also like, you know, I think a standout feature, this was obviously the case, in Mass Effect in the original trilogy, certainly with Liara, later with Kaidan, and some other characters that I'm forgetting right at this exact second. But Reyes was one of those characters that was an option for both, bro writer and cis writer, and I that wasn't something that like attracted me to him as a character, but certainly like I think that that's something that it should be noted, and I really liked that he was an option for both, because not enough characters are, which is something we'll get to soon. So yeah, I just wanted to give Reyes Vidal some love. I think he probably is not one of the more romance characters in Andromeda. But I really liked his romance and his character, and I wanted to make sure I gave him time of day.
I was just looking up his voice actor because I was trying to remember if I'd heard him anywhere. He is Male Hawk in Dragon Age 2.
Well, okay. I think I knew that and didn't know it. Like, I think I had read it.
I didn't know that either. Neat. Which is funny because Female Hawk is also in Mass Effect 3. She plays Bryn Cole, Jacob's new boo.
Okay, I did know that.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, yeah, who you got next for us, Lexi?
Ashley. I can't not talk about my girl.
Ashley.
Ashley.
Just said that like the most predatory ever.
It was great. Ashley. Basically, with Ashley's romance, you know, again, I should have been bi. You know, that's one of my grievances, I'll say, was just the fact that Caden got to be bi in Mass Effect 3, but Ash didn't. I mean, Ash got shafted in Mass Effect 3 anyway. I think a big part of that is just my own personal issue, but I've romanced her with a male Shep. I've romanced her with a modded femme Shep. It's fine. I think with Ashley in general, I love her character. I've spoken in her defense, and I've spoken about her character arc and how she grows to really, you know, be distrustful of aliens, to seeing Liara like a really good friend and Tally like a little sister, and, you know, fighting alongside Garrus and everybody else. So, you know, I think overall that Ashley has a really good character arc, so that makes her romance all the more interesting. And I know people are like, oh, why are you playing Mass Effect if you're only going to romance the humans? And I'm like, well, that's because they have some really good human characters, for the most part. So Ashley is, you know, she's coming from, in Mass Effect 1, when it starts, she's coming from the place of having to work twice as hard because of the family curse. With the fact that the Alliance is blackballing them for what her grandfather did, you know, 50 years ago. And so she's had to work twice as hard to get where she is. So she's very much about herself, but staying to the rules and staying to the regulations. And while, you know, still expressing herself, you know, she often, like, asks, you know, permission to speak, like, off the record, because she's cautious about how her CO is going to treat her once they find out, you know, her backstory. And so I think with Ash, she's kind of got that, like, you know, we're flying a stolen warship. Like, now it's kind of like you hit on her a little bit more, and it's kind of like, well, are you ready to break these regs with me? Like, are you ready to commit to this? But she's kind of got that, like, she's younger. She's a couple years, a few years younger than Shepard, but she's kind of got that, I don't know, it's just, she's someone I would love to go have a beer with, first of all. Like, if she was a real person, I'd be like, I want to go buy you a beer. Let's go. But I think she's just got that really good foundation, and to flirt with her is fun. She makes a couple of remarks. There's one where she's like, oh, I'm a Hellcat off the battlefield too. And you're like, ma'am, hello. You know, and of course the iconic, you know, if you expect me to dress up in thigh highs and a tinfoil skirt, you better take me out to dinner first. And you're like, okay, I like you. You're kind of a firecracker. Like, I like her personality, really. And then, of course, you know, with the Vermeier survivor romances, we only get to see them on Horizon and everything's confusing. You were dead for 2 years. And I know people like to give them grief, but you have to remember, they grieved Shepard. Shepard was fucking dead. Shepard was dead. They were gone, dead, space, goodbye. So that's someone that you were romantically involved with, and all of a sudden they're dead. So that's a lot to grieve and process, and then to suddenly see them alive again. Yeah, as she says, you know, screw the science, it's a bloody miracle, but also, like, that's a lot of fuckery. And then to be working with the known terrorist organization that you fought against in all the little side quests where they were experimenting on people is, like, they have every right to be suspicious. I do wish that Shepard could have, like, you know, explained better, but that's another thing. And then, of course, reuniting in 3. So, you know, the fact is that the Vermeier survivor spends, like, 2/3 of the game, well, I'll say at least 1/3, maybe half the game, in the hospital. And so you're kind of tentatively reconnecting. And I really like that aspect, actually. I really like that sort of, like, okay, we had a thing, and then you died, and then we kind of had an argument, and now we're kind of like, what are we? I kind of like that sort of, like, you're still friendly and professional, and then eventually, like, it's like when you ask them to come back to your ship, it's like, okay, but, like, what are we? Like, are we, can we, you know, continue? But it's kind of like you almost start over. You almost kind of start over with them, and kind of figure things out now that you're a little older and you've gone through all this and there's a war going on. And, you know, you kind of figure it out and go from there. Now, that goes smoothly, assuming you didn't bone anybody in Mass Effect 2, because if you do, now, I know Caden gets kind of pissy with Femship, that, you know, oh, you cheated on me, blah, 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 and blah, 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 and you either have to, like, you can't, Femship can't really tell him off, you either, like, lie or, like, apologize, whereas Dude Shep, if you dated Ashley, then romance Miranda, and then went back to Ash, or was like trying to. She gets really catty. They make her really catty, which feels out of character to me. And she's like makes a remark about Miranda's skin tight apparel, which is kind of ironic considering what they did to Ashley with her skin tight apparel. But I digress. That's one thing I would change. But you can actually, you shut her down. You can tell her like whatever had happened, or I don't know because I don't do that to her. But you know, you kind of, there's some issues there that I would like to change. But you know, all in all, I think Ashley just has a certain vibe to her that I really like, and I think, and again, her growth and development as a character is something that I like, and I kind of like that. You know, especially if you play Paragon as I do with, and she's a little more renegade, it's kind of like they balance each other in a way. And I think that, you know, she's a little more lighthearted. She's a little more, I don't want to say party girl because she's not, but she's a little more lenient and a little more less strict, despite the fact that she's a career military woman. But I think she's just a fun person and, you know, she really does care and you end up falling in love with her. She's just one of, like, honestly, she is someone, like, if she was real, that she was someone I would like to bring home to my family. Like, that's someone that I would pair myself with. Now, again, like I said, Vermeer Survivor got cut a lot. Unfortunately, like, you don't really, that's, and just because I just finished Citadel, you only get the one date with Ash with the drinking. You don't get, and you don't really get any special romantic animations or anything other than like one remark that Shepard makes. I think it's kind of dirty, but like, but that's it. Like, they're like, unlike with Miranda where you know get to snuggle or whatever, kiss her, but Ash you don't. So it's kind of like again, just wish overall that there was more to do with her. That sounded dirty, but That's my thing. But I think Ashley's is just a nice overall, like, I love her character, so therefore I like dating her.
Yeah, I think that's, like, kind of similar to what I was saying about Liara.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, I've said it before, like, I think as I'm learning Liara more and, like, as I'm playing as an older person, I'm not that old, but as, like, an older person than when I first played it, like, I think Liara is still my favorite romance, but, like, there's other people I'd romance before Liara at this point. Like, Liara is more like my best friend than anything, so I totally get it. All right, I'm going to round out my three picks with another one that some people might not see coming. And that is Jack, who I actually spoke about earlier in the episode during my two-minute defense. But the reason that I chose... Excuse me, guys. The reason that I chose Jack was because kind of like what I spoke about in the two-minute defense, which is just that she, I think, is a character that, A, many people forget about. I know there are some diehard Jack romancers that exist, and I am not saying that they don't, and I am not saying that they forget about her, but I think she's probably one of the least picked romances. I think that the top romances are who? Garrus, Liara, and Tali. And I think that Jack has a better romance than, all or some of those. And part of that is because, this is not the layered romance that I was mentioning before. Lexi will, finish the, romances off with that one. But she also has, she's just very layered herself. And so I think that similar to Liara, like the way that Jack and Shep, have a connection, it just lends just like a hand to if you choose to romance her. I have romanced Jack once. I actually made a male Shepherd on my 360 with the intention of romancing Miranda, and I ended up romancing Jack, and which is, I know, shocking for many people who know me, but Jack was just a pleasant surprise of a romance. I truly just enjoyed every bit of her romance. The Citadel romance scene when you're playing in the, I always say the name of it wrong, but in the Armax Arena, I think is what it's called. And there's just an absolutely stellar romance scene in there that you guys get. You know, she's very vulnerable in not like a creepy way. You know, sometimes I think, similar to what Lexi was talking about, when it comes to a relationship between men and women, sometimes a trope or a little bit of a, I'm careful to say it, but like a fetishization of like a of like a woman becoming vulnerable for the sake of the man. Yeah, like similar. They don't do that with Jack. Again, I think that Jack is actually one of the strongest written characters in the game. It makes me wonder if somebody in to what Lexi was saying before, like if somebody in the dev team had experienced trauma, and lent their experiences to making sure that Jack was written well. And so I don't feel like when she's being vulnerable with Shepard that it's she's feeling pressured into being vulnerable with Shepard. I think that it's they write it very organically and very naturally, and that to me just makes Jack one of the strongest romances and one of the realest romances. Because when you, and this is coming from A, somebody who likes the Jack romance, but B, somebody who works, you know, in social services as a mental health professional, when you are in a relationship that's not enabling, so it's not like allowing somebody to continue with their trauma and live in their trauma, but when you're helping somebody identify what it is that you that they want their trauma to be, the role that it plays in their life, that's better than I see Lexi like nodding emphatically. So happy. that is really what partnership is and what love is. And so BioWare, truly, like, kudos to you guys. I'm gonna download the patch and do a FemShep Jack romance.
Do it.
Because now I have some Jack feels. I have it already. I already have it. What am I talking
about? You
do,
because the Miranda and the Jack one is the same mod.
Sorry, I just had pregnancy. Pregnancy brain. that's like the new song for our podcast. but then, like, I'm trying, you know, Lexi's doing a good job of, like, listing things. I kind of had a small critique of Kara. I guess the only thing maybe that I would critique about Jack is, I guess some people might think she's unapproachable, like in Mass Effect 2, and that like immediately turns them off to her, so they don't even have the ability to explore the romance with her. I don't even know if that's a negative. I also can say like I haven't like taken a deep dive into the romance to know if there's any flaws. Here's the flaw: she should have been an option for both FemShep and male Shep, if only, not because of how she looks, I'm not giving into that stereotypical bullshit, but because she talks about having like a polyam experience in her life. So like why she would block herself out to FemShep is absolutely.
And even just as an aside, I believe even Courtney Taylor herself was confused that her romance got cut, because obviously she would have recorded lines. And definitely expressed was like what? Like, she was confused herself that Jack wasn't as intended.
Yeah, by as intended. So that's my Jack spiel. Lexi is going to round out the Lexi and Rachel top three romances with what is going to be a banger of whatever is happening here, monologue, a spiel.
A spiel.
Take
yeah.
it away.
So I'm going to round out with none other than Miranda Lawson. You know, if you know me, Miranda is. I mean, I love Ashley, don't get me wrong, but I think overall Miranda is my favorite Mass Effect character. I can strongly say that. So Miranda's romance is, I think, in my opinion, my favorite and one of the top romances, because, you know, you're getting placed into this situation as Shepard from the Alliance, whatever your headcanon about how they feel about Cerberus, but Cerberus is poised as, you know, a terrorist organization, and Miranda is, well, Cerberus cheerleader, to quote Jack. And, you know, she spent 2 years of her life devoted to bringing your ass back from the dead to save the world, which is pretty epic if you think about it. You know, and she's kind of the face of Cerberus, but also their you know, commanding officer. I mean, well, executive officer, if you want to get technical. And so you have these two, you know, and she's very capable in her own regard. And I know we're going to talk about her story a little bit, but, you know, she's come so far for herself, and her horrendous upbringing with her father, and, you know, the fact that she was made to be perfect, literally genetically perfect, but she still deals with her own flaws. She still deals with the fact that socially she's awkward as hell. Because she's so professional and career minded, like she just focuses on work so much that she doesn't know how to relax. She doesn't know how to be a human being, funnily enough. And you know, they've got the mission ahead, but you start to warm up to each other. And you know, and I had Canon in my Shepherd, her own experience was that, finding out that Miranda had a baby sister that she did everything to protect from their father is kind of like the eye-opening moment where you actually get to see the other side of the Ice Queen, so to speak, where, you know, she lets her guard down. She lets herself be vulnerable in front of you, and you're like, wow, okay, like I view you differently now. And I think overall that sort of arc, like, again, she's one of those great characters that has such a good development over the two games that, standalone romance or not, she's great. But to add that romance element in, you start to express interest, but it's kind of like, okay, but as you know, and as Miranda says, like, what idiotic bunch of hormones thought that now was a time for love when you've got, you know, a one-way trip, suicide mission coming up. But I think, you know, that sort of, moving through the boundaries of, you know, beliefs about Cerberus and beliefs about the Alliance and personal, you know, issues, to kind of understanding each other. And actually, I saw a really good text post on Tumblr the other day. Let me see if I can just grab it real quick. That was talking about Miranda. I hope I reblogged it, because if not, I'm not going to remember how it was worded specific. Oh, here it is. The person said, always thinking about how with a soul survivor, Miranda's loyalty mission is not just Shepherd earning Miranda's loyalty, but Miranda earning Shepherd's loyalty, which again, with my Shepherd, I run a colonist soul survivor. Soul survivor, for those that might not recall, is Shepherd service history. They were sent to the planet Akuz to investigate, and their unit got attacked by Thresher Maws, and Shepherd was the only one to survive out of the 50 Marines sent there. And you find out later from an actual other survivor that was taken by Cerberus and experimented on, that it was Cerberus who was responsible for setting the Thresher Maws on them to see how the Alliance would react. So it was Cerberus's fault that happened. So to have a Shepherd with that in mind and to kind of earn their trust with each other, I think is huge. I love that development. It's I don't want to say it's a slow burn, because the game doesn't give you that many opportunities to make it a slow burn. You know, I think by the second flirtatious interaction, you can kiss her, which, you know what? I did both. So recently I've been doing the FemShep Miranda mod because I needed that in my life. So they've basically made the mod, but they filled in the missing dialogue with other FemShep dialogue. So it does actually feel really immersive, even though it's not the exact dialogue of the original. But I have romanced her with the dude ship as well. Personally, I like her either way. Doesn't matter what gender Shepherd is, but for my own fulfillment's sake, I've been doing FemShep. But, you know, you can take a renegade option and kiss her, and she's like, what the hell was that? But then also, like, Shepherd's got this stupid smile on their face. It's great. You know, and they kind of burn that, like, through this romance that they've kind of got this crazy shit going ahead, and we might be crazy to do this, but we're here right now, and I care about you, and we'll see what happens. And I think that's, it's just got so many layers of Miranda also letting herself be vulnerable, where she's opening herself up to this, where she's, you know, we do see later in the Lair of the Shadow Broker, some personal details about herself. And, you know, she was looking to have hookups for the sake, because she apparently wanted to have a child, but again, thanks to her egomaniacal father, made that genetically impossible for her. So, you know, we get to see this other vulnerability that, you know, and I think Jacob actually has a line too, where they might have had a thing at one point, because he makes a mention of that she requires a better man than I, which kind of implies that they might have had a thing. But I think it's really nice to have them gain each other's trust and loyalty, and then realize that they're a team. in Mass Effect 2. Like, that's peak for me. And then skip to Mass Effect 3, and Miranda's on the run because she, like, told the elusive man where to go. And, you know, you're kind of, again, Shepard's been locked up for 6 months, right? Like, they've been house arrested. They're waiting trial. So Miranda's kind of like, you know, do you want, like, where do we stand? Now, I will say BioWare is absolutely evil. With regards to this, because if you say no, if you romance Miranda and then decide that you don't want to keep romancing her, she dies no matter what you do. No matter if you tell her about Kai Lang, no matter what. BioWare said, oh, you want to break up with Miranda Lawson? Oh, honey, too bad. She's going to die. So forewarning, but that's a thing. Also, the Legendary Edition really, really went full 4K textures with, if you see Miranda crying, which I'm like, why would you make her cry? But that's besides the point. But getting toward the end, you know, I think they just have such a good balance. And like I said, I've just been doing all these scenes recently. So it's like, they come from two different worlds, but they've come together and have such a loyalty. And, you know, I think they really see the future together, no matter what happens. And that's, you know, call me a romantic, but that's something that I really like. And, you know, and the two of them, especially the casino scene, which I just did earlier before we started this podcast, where they get to just be girls on the town or people on the town, and trying to be normal. You know, it's kind of one of those things that's not really a reality for them, but they're trying. And, you know, and I think Miranda just has those little other nerdy aspects to her personality that you get to see in a romance that you don't as a friend. And I think just overall with her development and change, you get to really see the person that Miranda Lawson was always meant to be. Rach is clapping.
No, that was really, I think they can hear me. That was really good. The only other thing that I'll add, if I might, because... Mm-hmm. Not like you didn't say everything that I wouldn't have even been able to said, but I've said this to Lexi before. There is no way that a person rebuilds Commander Shepard, guy, gal, or non-binary pal, whatever like form of Shepard, and not like get some sort of like a deep emotional connection that, given the right circumstance, could become romance. I understand, for those of you yelling, like, yes, people are, I know that, in my opinion, sexuality is a spectrum. I know that there are people who are more heterosexual than not, or more homosexual than not, whatever. Listen to me. If you put somebody back together, you're going to love them. And if the right moments happened, doesn't matter. That's why sexuality is a spectrum, because of things like that. Obviously, this is fiction. I get it. I understand. There's no reason.
She also already committed 2 years Correct. Of her own life. They lived out on that station. They did not leave. Two years.
Correct. And so, again, similar to
That's
Jack.
That's almost as long as my last relationship.
And we can... let's get into that, huh? $75, please, for an hour. What I was gonna say was just so everybody knows, I almost just busted my ass. I almost just like slipped and fell out of this chair, and that would have been really bad because I'm pregnant. Oh. But we're fine. Baby and I are fine. We can use that last comment to kind of like move into kind of the last big topic. We told you guys this was gonna be a lengthy. If you're okay, Lexi, I'm totally fine, like, skipping romances that we didn't really like. I think we can...
Thought we kind of covered that, but yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to go into, like, a monologue on why I don't like Jacob's romance. We can kind of move into kind of the last topic. We have one really, like, cutesy, fun thing to end on, and then I promise we'll be done. I hope that you guys are...
still here.
I hope you're still here. I hope you're enjoying it. Seriously, we want to know who your favorite romances are. So
please
tell us.
Comment.
If you can't tell, we're into it. So the last topic, though, that kind of has to do with some of the things that we've mentioned. Actually, I'm going to lump these two together. I forgot there were two.
Yeah.
It was to lump them together. A is just, you know, the LGBTQ+ representation. Making sure that happens. But I think that a way that could have happened is if the balance between the romances that FemShep and even Cis Rider and Male Shepherd and Bro Rider get are there's a terrible imbalance. Mm-hmm. Lexi sent over a tremendous graphic.
There was a graphic that someone put together where they broke it down by male player, female character, female player, male character, female player, female character, and male player, male character across the trilogy and Andromeda. And, you know, they detail what game you can start romancing them in. And by far, male player character and a female character romance is like out to here. And then it goes female player, male character, female player, female character, and then male player, male character. It's just this cascading tiers of availability, you know? And I think the balance issue has always been a thing where it's like, I do think that they've made, you know, the trilogy with Male Shepherd in mind. They always have. You know, and FemShep was kind of on the back burner. I mean, she obviously got included in the very first game, but there are some things in there, like the Harkin's little sexist comment in there. Like, there's just different things that got thrown in there that was kind of like, did you really need to do that? Like, they're supposed to be equivalent, you know? And I think that speaks to the romances. And, you know, just for the sake of the viewer, I'm sure we can link this on Twitter with the episode when it gets posted, but there's... let's see, Ashley, Liara, Miranda, Tally, Jack, Kelly, Samara, Morinth, Allers, and then for Andromeda, there's Cora, Vetra, PB, Lexi?
Wait, what?
No, wait, who's the other person on the far right side?
Oh, that's Carrie. She's like she's like the, better than Diana Allers. she's like the Diana Allers of...
So there's 14 for Bro Shep or Bro Rider. And then again, now for just the original trilogy's sake, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 options. And then for the female player, male character, I'll just do the trilogy to make things quicker, but there's Caden, Jacob, Garrus, Thane, Javik, James. But you also, this graphic also outlines the ones that are just flings. So Javik and James, which have a whole other can of worms with how those come about. But really, there's only 4. And of course, as you know, Thane gets killed and what? Jacob cheats on...
kidding.
You got me there. And Jacob cheats on you. So really, that only leaves FemShep looking at dudes with 2 options. And only one of those goes from the first game all the way through. And then female player, female character in the trilogy, of course, Liara, Kelly, Samara, Morinth, Sam. And again, Kelly, Samara, Morinth are all flings. And of course, Sam is only in the third game. So really, the only long-standing female-female relationships, which again, Asari are monogendered or whatever, but BioWare made them all feminine presenting anyway. The only romance you get as a sapphic female player character is Liara in the trilogy, and then of course male player male character is Caden and Steve. So again, they're even more shafted in terms of availability,
and they're both only an option in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah
There was something you said, but I forgot what it was going to be. What I was gonna say, continue, it'll come to me.
So, you know, and I understand, you know, they did advocate for themselves to get Caden as a bi romance option, and I don't hold that against them. I don't hold that against you guys. Like, there's no harboring there. It's when now that with the Legendary Edition that people are saying, oh, well, Caden should be in Mass Effect 1 too. And I'm like, yeah, that's great, but I'm like sitting here in be nice if both Vermeier survivors were treated equally, huh? But, and another beef I did have, and I, you know, I can't find a source on it anywhere, but it happened years ago and it will stay with me for the rest of my life. A BioWare dev at one con somewhere, when asked why Ashley wasn't made bisexual, said, and I quote, "Ashley didn't fit the bill of bisexuality." And back then, I personally ID'd as bi, and I took that quite personally, because I was like, well, what does that mean? You know, it's not like, what does that mean? And again, I've searched my blog high and low, try to find, because I know I found it on Tumblr, but can't find it. But, you know, it's like this mentality of like, oh, you know, and that's fine if they wanted to write the character like that. But at the same time, like, as I said, Ashley got shafted in general in 3. So it's kind of like, it's just extra salt on the wound when people don't account for how these sapphic things, ships play out, which again, I'm not going to get into because it's a whole other can of worms that we need for another podcast to talk about. But, you know, in terms of just in terms of visible numbers, it's clear that folks looking for same gender romances get the short end of the stick, but also, you know, men more so than women in that regard, just in terms of numbers. But then also, FemShep really got screwed over because none of Dude Shep's romances are automatically like, none of them can die like without your control, without your say so, really. So unless you mess up or choose to shoot Ashley in the council situation on the coup attack, or if they die in the suicide mission, everyone else lives. So they, you know, they don't have a Thane or a Jacob equivalent, which is really interesting the way that they've decided to take those routes. Now Thane, you know,
I can, I'm okay with Thane
already, like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
He was already sick, but Jacob's whole, I mean, Jacob's writing we've talked about before is bad. It's full of tropes, racism. It's bad. And I mean, it's also just bad writing. I mean, I've tried to watch the romance where but he's like, oh, but the prize, like, that is as Tanaya said when she was on the show, it was so corny.
Yeah.
She couldn't continue with it. And then of course to have, you know, a black man with a cheating arc, it was not a good thing.
And something that I was going to add, and this kind of like rolls into it's what you're talking, you know, what you're speaking about, but then also like bringing everything together. So I'm somebody who's not like, and I don't mean to say this in a negative way, but like, I think sometimes people are afraid to say like straight people are okay. Like, it's okay to have straight romances, and it totally is. And I don't think anybody would say that it's not. What Lexi and I are speaking about are just like, again, like, to very simply, like, the imbalances between, you know, straight and not straight romances, female led romances, aka femme shepherd romances versus male shepherd romances. Oh, hello. My baby's moving. But the other thing, what I was going to say was, and it's just to like, again, bring this to the finish line a little bit, the way that, you know what, one of the things we've talked about at the beginning of this episode, in the middle, and then it's going to come back around right now, is it's a player choice, player volition. And so when you give the protagonist the option of romancing whoever the hell they want, you're giving the player the volition to play a straight character, or to play a gay character, or a bi character, or a pan character, or Polly, I think, and I'm going to put this over here because I think like Polly is great and should be explored more in video games. I will take a step back and say like the mechanics of it are probably different.
Yeah.
But like Polly, great. We should have that option. I don't know what the mechanics would look like, and I don't have enough knowledge to talk about it. But when you allow FemShep to romance anybody she wants, it allows the player to fully, like, I am playing this character as this. Mm-hmm. I know that she could go over here and romance this person, but in my game, she's not. Done. And just to talk about that a little bit more, a game that was supposed to do that and then didn't do it very well was Cyberpunk. And Cyberpunk is a whole other conversation. We're not getting into Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk had the capacity to be a game that would allow a trans woman to romance whoever they wanted, but they didn't do it that way. I don't understand why games just can't do it. And this is coming from somebody who is obviously has attraction to across the border. I'm not even going to limit myself to two genders, like across the border. Like I'm somebody who could be attracted to anybody. And like, just let me, just let my protagonist do that.
Easy. Right. And, done. You know, and I think like, again, we talk about the whole idea between, okay, yeah, you can have characters with established sexualities, fine, but make it balanced. Like that's something to, for everyone. And I mean, BioWare does this to me. It's a personal attack that they keep taking the characters that are extremely my type and making them heterosexual, like every other. And then the worst offense was when they make Cassandra Pentecost look as butch as she does and make her straight to avoid stereotypes. And then on top of that, let you flirt with her up until a certain point as a female inquisitor, until which she's like, oh, well, I, you know, I don't like you like that, but we can still be friends. And I'm like, that's literally every straight girl I've ever had a crush on in my life. Why are you putting this in my video game? and, you know, and again, that came out after Mass Effect, so who knows what they'll do. Now, that said, again, another Dragon Age installation where they did it the other way was Dragon Age 2, where your four main romanceable companions, Anders, Fenris, Isabella, Meryl, are all open to Hawk regardless of their gender. It was, you know, people joke and say, oh, it's like the bi's all squad together. But I think that, and then the only straight character they had in that game was Sebastian, who is a DLC character. So, you know, people joke about it. I mean, I don't mind the guy. But, you know, the main character squad, like, you could romance them regardless. And I thought that was a really neat idea. Now, again, that's only four people. But I thought that was kind of a difference from Origin to Dragon Age 2. And then they changed it back for Inquisition. But, again, it's up to, you know, how they want to play it. And I mean, personally, you know, I can understand having characters with different established sexualities. That's fine. I just think that this should be balanced. But on the other hand, as someone who likes characters that they keep making straight, it would be nice if I could just romance them as a girl.
Sure. Yeah. Lexi could see me like shaking my head and like throwing my arms around. I'm somebody who agrees. I get it. There are humans on this planet who are not interested in the other gender or the same gender. Fine. But in a game where you, let's just make it very black and white for the sake of the example. If I can pick to play as a boy or a girl, I know that there's a whole slew of things in between, but let's say, just like Mass Effect Original Trilogy, if I can play as a boy or a girl, as soon as I select the female characters are into men and the male characters are into men. Great. That way everybody's an option, and that's just like how they are for your playthrough. You want to play as female Shepherd the next time? Great. The women are into women, and the men are into women. Done. Because what happens is the rest of the game, you can still have Tali and Garrus get together. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's fine, right? Like, okay, phenomenal. Because if you're not romancing either of them, then their sexuality doesn't affect you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Done. Great. I don't even know what other couples get together in the games we're going to talk about in a second.
Ashley and Vega.
Great. I love Ashley and Vega. I think that they're really cute. If I don't romance Ashley or Vega, then their sexualities do not matter to Shepard.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to romance Ashley, I would. She wouldn't be an option for Vega anyway. Done diggity. Done deal. So
yeah, you know, and like I said, and I think too, the context is important, and this goes back to your comment about cyberpunk. In the future, like cyberpunk with all these chrome things that you could put in your body, and yet people are like, they're still really limited, and also like they really limited the romances in general. I think a lot of people were disappointed by that, myself included. But once again, why do they make the prominent, strong-hearted brunette straight? The personal attack. Stop doing it, games. I swear, please. that's an aside. But you know, I think in the context too, we're in space. I mean, yes, people are still gonna have sexualities. I personally only date women, but I think also, again, we see how many heterosexual women there are in this game, supposedly. And I'm looking at Jack specifically,
right,
but
yeah,
like, you know, is that really true to what people would be like in the future where things have changed and alien races? Like, are aliens really truly limited by human concepts of sexuality?
There's no
I
way.
Think the fuck not.
Sure. And again, so for those of you guys who are like, it's a game, we know. And like, I can, again, like what I said earlier when we first started speaking about, like, I'm willing to give Mass Effect 1 a pass for being made in 2007. I get it. And like, mm-hmm. I understand like the technological boundaries that
the response they got from Fox really limited. That's why they cut out Miranda Tally Jack, is because they were worried about negative feedback.
And, you know, we're just here to sort of just, of course, this is why you're listening to our podcast, because you just love our opinions. We're just here to share our feelings on it. But just to sort of top this off, I am still mad that I couldn't get a chrome dick in Cyberpunk 2077. Okay, that was all that I wanted. I wanted my chick to have a chrome piece in her pants at all times, and I couldn't. I found them, but I couldn't buy them. I did have the melee baton weapon that looked like a dildo. Well, I think we may be done with this topic. Do you feel like we've...
Yeah, I think we can end on our little fun note, though.
Cool.
So we briefly mentioned, you know, calibrations, they do happen. I forgot about it. I have a really funny screen cap that I took where I walked in on them and then turned around immediately. So my shepherd's like running out of the door. It's she was like, okay, I'm out. I thought that was cute. But I will say my favorite rare pair, and I don't know if it's rare because it is canon technically, is Ash and Vega.
Sure.
I will say that I think they have just a fun, flirty vibe. They're seen flirting in one of the corners during the loud party, and you know, Vega saying something extremely stupidly flirty, like cheesy flirty in Spanish, and Ash is like, I don't know what you just said, but keep saying it. Like,
yeah.
It's so funny. You know, and the insinuation that they hooked up. I mean, I think a lot of characters could have hooked up at that party. It was a pretty big apartment with like 3 bedrooms and lots of corners, and have fun with your imagination. But that one's my favorite rare pair. Although, and unsurprising, another rare pair of mine would be Ashley and Miranda, because, you know, big sister vibes and kind of coming past that loyalty of two Alliance and Cerberus rivals to lovers. It's great.
Sure. I would say I also feel the same about Ashley and Vega. They could be my parents. That's fine. my favorite, a new rare pair for me that I really, really like is Ashley and Trainer. There are some really good fics out there, some beautiful fandom peeps who were like, so there's a chance that Trainer and Ashley could have been on Horizon together, like, and just beautifulness ensues. So if you guys are fan fiction readers, I strongly suggest you go check that out. But some of you listening, Scout, this is for you. I know that my favorite rare pair is a pair that has never been confirmed except for in my dreams. And it could totally have happened. Miranda and Liara. Listen to me. Listen to me, guys. I'm just going to rant for a second. Linda's listen. You're trying to tell me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to go into it. But in the comics, Miranda and Liara do work together briefly to like get Shepard's body back, and everything that I've talked about in terms of like Liara's connection to Shep, and then like Miranda takes over, and like, you don't think that they had a moment where they were like, shit, I'm hurting. Liara's like, you know, I know a lot more about myself now. Let's do this. Maybe I'm transferring a little. I don't know. but like, I'm really into that one. I'm writing a fan fiction. I owe Scout an update. They're going to kill me, because I haven't written in a while. Sorry. Been a little preoccupied. But yeah, those are my two favorite rare pairs. I'm okay with calibrations. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, I'm really
kind of
care.
One of those weirdos who's like, I'm not into it, but I'm not upset about like, Alien Legion. Like, I'm okay with it. I think,
that's a thing.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a thing.
Okay.
I'm not like into it. It's not like my favorite thing, but I'm like, yeah, I could do it. Like, if I thought I was dying and like Legion's cold, hard exoskeleton was there to greet me, sure.
all right.
Yeah, so that's our rare pairs. Also, we asked you guys to tell us what your favorite romances are. Let us know if you have any weird rare pairs, or if this is the first time you're hearing the term rare pair. Think about it. Probably some rare pairs for you.
Probably.
Thank you guys for listening. This was a long one. We hope that you enjoyed our passion as much as we did.
If you're still here,
if you're still here,
we appreciate you.
And, you know, maybe you took a break.
Yeah.
Came back. You left. You came back. You guys are awesome. Thank you guys so much. And we hope to deliver more content.
Catch you on the next one.
If you liked this podcast, please rate, like, and comment on your platform of choice. To show further support, you can follow us on Twitch, Twitter, and subscribe to our channels on YouTube. Everything discussed today will be archived on the Broker's Terminal. After all the Galaxy secrets are at the Shadow Broker's fingertips.